So guys, welcome back to the Love Song Book Club podcast. Here we are with the second half of our series of podcasts looking at Owari no Hoshi no Love Song. We've moved on from the depressing saga of Love Song, and now we're moving into something a bit more poppy, but not necessarily less depressing. I'm your host, Aspirity, and joining me this week, we have Biscuit Dough.
What's up?
The Rational Pie.
Hey there.
And joining us for the first time on this podcast, we have Cannon.
Good morning, Aspie.
Morning, Cannon. How are you?
Tired. Can't wait for the podcast, though. Been waiting how long for this?
I mean, like, you're like kind of the person that's been nagging me since forever that we need to do a love song podcast. Okay, so to start us off, I'd like Cannon to talk about what the hell Owari no Hoshi no Love Song is about.
Alright, Owari no Hoshi no Love Song is another concept album like the last love song, made after Angel Beats by Maida. A lot of people like to joke that this album's so depressing because Maida was butthurt about Angel Beats. How true that is, we'll never know.
That's my favorite theory.
But
we all know Maida makes the best music after something horrible.
Would appear he's just hanging out on Rewrite with the people, not doing much because it's Maida and he didn't do much on that. And then Yagi's there just singing, and he's like, "Oh, you sound so fucking good. Let's make an album."
And she was like, "Yeah, okay."
And I think that's pretty much the story of it, really. When was that? That's like 2012. Got a
April 25th, 2012.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's almost an anniversary coming up here. Pretty
nailed soon. It.
happy almost birthday, Owari no Hoshi no Love Song.
God, that's 5 years now. That doesn't feel like it.
Don't you feel
so? What did Maida actually do on this?
Write it.
Yeah, it composed it. Really, I think he did most of it.
He did not produce it.
That whole Flaming June thing.
There's a lot of, or not produce. No, he did produce it. It's the arrangement. So like the instruments and shit, he did not do it. Whereas like a lot of the old stuff had a lot of Love Song had like it did have guest appearances for arrangement and stuff, but he did a lot of it himself, I suppose. Just kind of like an in-house thing. Whereas this is a whole lot of different people actually. Some of which I was happy to look back at after learning about, you know, who had done what songs, and it was kind of cool to notice that some composers like Yu Yupe had done arrangement for my favorite song on the album, so pretty cool stuff.
Feels like it's got a much bigger budget than the other Love Song.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And there's a lot of range.
The animations and songs, especially.
Too. I feel like there's a lot more different kind of types of music thrown in. Well, it's like a lot of it's kind of a pop rock kind of vibe, but then there's
actually
some stuff's a little bit heavier and stuff's a lot lighter. It's got kind of a nice mix,
yeah,
across the board, as opposed to like a one or two song. Whereas like you had something like Shinwa is kind of an odd song out on the album, whereas this kind of has quite a few songs that are significantly heavier. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty eclectic, I'd say. But it definitely has more of an upbeat feel than Love Song does, in my opinion. So
until you read the words.
Well, yeah. Like, the music is upbeat, is what I'm saying. But yeah, so like, Maida wrote and composed the entire album. We have Yunagi Nagi on vocals and a bunch of other people arranging it. So, yeah, pretty awesome. And it's funny you mentioned that, yes, it does have animations which were released publicly on YouTube for free, which you can just watch, and which is freaking awesome. And it's kind of like, I guess, a teaser for the rest of the album, though I wonder how many people actually bought the album after that, but I'd like to hope some people did.
High five.
Hey. So, what's really cool about this is since the videos are publicly available, I can put them on the podcast and not get sued. Probably. So if you're watching on YouTube,
that's always helpful,
baby.
So if you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see those. So it'll be pretty cool to illustrate what we're talking about, at least for the songs that have animations. So yeah, Owari no Hoshi no Love Song, I know this is Cannon's favorite of the two.
I don't think that's true anymore.
No? Oh.
I don't really go into Love Song, the lyrics. So I very much enjoyed those podcasts.
Interesting. Well, nonetheless, I know you've always had a soft spot for Owari no Hoshi no Love Song, so
absolutely.
I'm glad you're at least on this podcast so you can gush about
it. I'm sure that still reigns true.
So then, let's not waste any more time. Let's jump into Owari no Sekai Kara, kind of like the title song of the album, probably the most popular, I'd say.
Definitely the best one to open it with.
It sounds like an anime opening to me, honestly. And I'm going to say that about a lot of these songs, but that it does make it a really good fit for the first song on the album, because it feels like a natural starting point for this.
Absolutely.
I can agree to that.
Like, I've said that, like, I would watch an anime based on this.
Yeah, it's called Charlotte. Wait.
Take that back. Take that back right now.
Yeah. Charlotte isn't nearly as good as this.
Fight me.
Okay.
I'll see you on the Z End Echo podcast.
Damn. Okay, so, Pi, do you want to talk about the music a bit?
I don't know. It's kind of hard to say much about it other than it feels a lot like an anime opening. It's got a lot of determination and a lot of drive in there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got some shifts in tone, but not really that much. Maybe it's
the only
a problem
shift in tone
with me.
Is like really at the dead end almost.
The solid minute
yeah.
of something completely
feels
different.
A bit more somber.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know, there's an awesome guitar solo in this song, which that's pretty fun. I'm sure somebody's going to want to talk about that
there's
when we get to
awesome
it.
Awesome guitar solos in this album, honestly. There's some yeah. really cool guitar arrangement going on this album.
Please, that's your area.
So how much of it...
It's good stuff.
So I have a question about the guitar stuff, since I'm not a guitarist. How much would you say is actual deliberate arrangement and composition, and how much would you just say is...
Do you think is them just jamming, basically, and letting
yeah.
it fill in? It's hard to say. A lot of it, like... It's interesting, because I usually would base that off of, like, how the rest of, like, the rhythm is going. Like, does it feel like it's kind of moving with the solo? Like, sometimes it'll... Like, the solo might, you know, go for... like some high notes, and then it's not gonna like the rest of the track might try to like follow that with like some higher kind of ambience noise or like a synth or something that can kind of come to match it, but mm-hmm. that's not always the case in this album. Like I feel like there's just kind of a basic kind of repeating backtrack in a lot of the stuff, and then the solo just goes
I got the sense that this album, because it's got so much higher of a budget, they take a lot of advantage of really good studio musicians. And
yeah, there's some big, like, there's a lot of big, you know, just musical artist names on here that I think were able to really kind of put their own twist on a lot of this stuff, especially, we'll get to it in another podcast, but yeah, I definitely agree. There's a artistic twist in the arrangements here.
Yeah, so for people who aren't familiar with the concept of a studio musician, basically when you go to a recording studio, a lot of times they'll have musicians who can play certain instruments or usually play a range of instruments, and you can just sort of book them to come in and fill in any of the parts that you're missing. So for an album like this, you're going to have a lot more professional level musicianship, as opposed to like the Last Love Song, which I think was made on a much smaller budget, and so you would find like Maeda either arranging a lot of the stuff in MIDI or performing it himself. Mm-hmm. So that's the big thing I'll say from this, is that all of these songs, the first song included, feel much more polished, as if they've got a lot more of that professional touch to them.
Yeah, absolutely.
This song was arranged by Shogo. I should have done more research about these specific individuals and their works. This is the only song that this person actually did. I'm not sure if all of this stuff was done like in one studio, or if it was like probably recorded in multiple studios and then sent around online or something. I'm not really sure how that worked out, but it's definitely you can tell through the album that there's a lot of different stuff going on. Like it feels like it comes from a lot of different musical backgrounds.
Okay, let's talk about the lyrics.
Oh, good, I can speak again. Well, that sure is straightforward as hell.
It seriously is. I think you're going to get that a lot with this album. It definitely leaves a lot less open for interpretation than the first album did, which is completely like open. It's in completely interpretation based.
Very open-ended stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The animation this only further
the animation helps quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you, in case you're wondering, yes, the world cool literally things? Ended.
There's like some really interesting stuff in the lyrics throughout this album, starting even with this song, where like it'll tell you kind of a straightforward story, but there's definitely some sort of theme to it. Like there's always some sort of moral or something that the main characters are learning.
Oh, this one's got a good
one. These first three songs. Yeah, there's a lot of like revelations happening in every song. You have a bunch of
the moral characters. Is don't use your random time travel power without thinking it through first.
Ask me, don't knock the time travel. I'll get back to that later.
Think before you act, and let's talk a little bit about paradoxes.
Real, there we go there.
So Canon, for our viewers who may have not looked too closely, what happened in this song? Let me know. Tell me what's going on. What the hell happened?
Well, the girl wants to bang, right?
yeah, okay.
And she's like...
With you so far.
Oh, I'll change my taste to what you like and all that. She is thirsty for this guy. And then he's like... then he's one day, he's just right. Like, hey, yo, look at Senpai over there. I bang her. And she's like... Ah, oh, shit.
Like, oh,
well,
shit.
I could time travel. I could fix this. I'm going to go back. She fucked up.
kind of a random revelation of just like, man, you must really love somebody. If you're just like, oh, that's cool. I'll just use my time travel ability. Like, wait a minute. Where did you get that from?
She raises herself in the past.
There's true willpower, honestly.
And the boy's like, hey, yo, you seen this girl? And she's like, no, it's me. No. So she gets have a little angst, see him look for, have him realize he really loved her now that she's gone. And then she tells him that, oh, it's me. And then she gets thrown into the future because time travel, I don't know.
Yeah, that was weird.
That's a pretty good summary.
No. It's good. It's good, right? Because it's clear as day that there's magic in this album.
Yeah.
In Love Song, that's more vague.
Yeah.
Is the gramophone fucking symbolic, or is it a literal gramophone with arms? But in this album, it's clear as day. She time traveled. There's magic. Get used to it, because it's all over the album.
Yep, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's good.
Might have bring in that supernatural.
It's a good opening song, because it makes that so clear.
Oh, yeah.
It makes it clear that the ruined world is not far off from a modern day. Mm-hmm. Among other things.
Mm-hmm.
Cough, closed world.
Okay, I call it the ruined world.
Yeah, I prefer that.
But closed world is the official.
Yeah, but I don't know.
No. If you look at the PV, right, there's a sweeping shot near the start of a city, and then later on in the song is that same city ruined. So it's the same world.
Yeah.
Basically, it...
Yes.
A literal translation would be world that has ended. I don't know. Closed world just seems odd to me.
Yeah, it's definitely strange.
Must be like some sort of idiom.
I mean,
I
got the official lyric book right here. This English is really, really awkward. Just all over it.
Yeah,
that's kind of why we were...
It's good to actually look at that booklet and then also look at Shonohito's stuff and kind of like
exactly.
Do some comparisons, and it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, I mean, Shinohito translated it as ended world, so there you go.
Yeah, I think that is accurate.
Yeah, I just use ruined world because that's what I've always used.
Yeah, that's fine. Anyway, whatever you call it, this is what it is, and...
Yeah, so you've got... So this is... We're starting with a love story, I suppose, is probably important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Considering this is again, Owari no Hoshi... No, love song.
Love song 2!
So we've got love song 2, baby, let's go. So there's definitely a theme of love here, and we've immediately got something different here. We've got for this story at least, it's a female as our protagonist, which is great. And I guess what I'm going to start asking is just because, okay, so she makes a terrible mistake and decides that, you know, instead of being true with herself in the present time, with Homeboy, she decides, oh, okay, I'm going to go ahead and try to do things some sort of weird, inadvertent way, and then realizes, wow, that was a really stupid decision, and then eventually has to realize, whenever she gets thrown into Future World, that, oh, well, because she's like, she asks, she says, like, oh, I'm going to go, and I'm going to start this crazy journey to try to find you again, but then, you know, the next stanza, she's just like, all right, I'm going to drop the picture, and I'm going to move on. Like, she realizes that she should just give up, and be like, all right, I've burned that bridge, basically, is kind of the sense that I got.
Hmm.
So, not necessarily a happy ending, but happy in a sense that I feel like she was able to respect that past and respect her mistake, and then go on into the world that she's in now.
Yeah.
That sure sounds like a good message. Message is like, move on with life no matter what. Don't always yearn for the past. Just be true to yourself. And oh, that is vintage Mida. Oh, Little Busters.
I love that stuff. Oh, yeah.
Amen, brother.
I love this shit.
So, the interesting question that I kind of have is, like, what's our perspective in this track? Because I feel like by the end of the song, she mentions, this is where I'm going to start my time leap thing. And so, like, I kind of thought that maybe there was kind of, like, a weird cycle going on here where, like, that's the starting point, and she, like, goes back in time to try the thing, and then it doesn't work, and now she's back where she started, I guess, and that's when she's realizing that she shouldn't fuck with it or something. Like, it's kind of confusing.
Wait, are you saying, like, after you said senpai and all that, then the world gets ruined, and then she travels back in time?
It's kind of, in a sense,
I've never thought of it that way. I figured she just teleported back after senpai.
Those last, like, two stanzas are kind of weird. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's why I'm asking the question, or not the last two, but the two before the end, where she's like, or even the second to last stanza as a whole, she's like, I'm holding a photograph and I'm remembering, and from here I started this thing. So that kind of feels like it's a memory. But then the next stanza is, will I ever be able to do that again? And now I'm going to walk forward, and she drops the photograph. So, like, there's kind of a weird inconsistency with that time. I wasn't sure where the actual starting point was.
All right, hang on. I'm looking at the PV here. You might be right, because when we go back to the ruined world, she's wearing, like, her ruined world outfit, not the school uniform.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird that she just fucking get thrown into the ruined world for the first time and have that.
I feel like it kind of bounces around a little bit.
I feel like you might be right there. I never thought about it.
Yeah, the perspective is just interesting. It doesn't probably really mean anything other than that it's kind of a retrospective overall.
Yeah.
And I think that adds a bit of interesting thought to the actual theme here of being able to move forward, because I feel like that reconciliation is happening during the course of this song, which I think is cool.
I can get down with this. It makes it better. This makes sense why she got thrown into the ruined world after she fucked up.
Yeah. It's like if you go back in time and you try to change something, it's like, no. And then it resets itself. Yeah. Like, that's kind of where I feel like we're going. Like, I don't feel like her actions caused what happens. I feel like what happens is an inevitability.
Okay.
But I feel it's like the rules of the world are keeping her from doing anything.
Mm.
Is kind of what's happening.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm very, like, sorry, I don't.
Yeah.
What do you think, Pi?
I don't know. I'm kind of a fan of the more straightforward interpretation that Canon had originally, honestly. So, it's a little bit mysterious as to why the character gets thrown forward into the world that's ended, but at the same time, it's just kind of an interesting twist ending on the story, right? It's just, you know, this sort of standard, like, oh, I wanted to make you love me, and then... It turns out that I actually, like, broke your heart in the process.
Knowing that this is a concept album, we don't know whether or not it's going to be a cross-world or anything. Like, it could still be one... Like, there could be continuity between the songs and their worlds. Definitely, probably not timelines.
Spoilers, we know the answer to this.
In regards to some other songs that we're going to be getting to. Killer Song, specifically. But, like... It sets an idea that there's, because it's the song of the end of the world or whatever, that clearly there's going to be there's a theme taking place already, and we're seeing two sides of one timeline, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. You're seeing here's Happy Land, and then there's obviously this future not Happy Land, and that's interesting.
Yeah. So, should we jump right into our extra track, Kimi no Airplane?
Yeah, sure.
Interesting inclusion, but yeah.
I followed Canon's suggestion here. And including it. You suggested putting it straight after Oaina Sakai Kara.
I mean, I feel like it fits. It doesn't. I feel like it doesn't necessarily fit musically, but I think that thematically it is acceptable.
I gotta get it out of the way somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's cool to include it, because it's very structurally love songy, but it just kind of doesn't squeeze into the spot just right, but it's okay.
I think you music guys will have more fun with this one than me.
So, hold on. We should talk about how, like, where this came from.
What's up?
Yeah, I'll get it. Sure.
Alright. So, before the album actually came out, it was a cover hit, I think. There was a single with Killer Song, Hawari no Sekai Kara, yeah. And this. But this ain't on the finished album. And as Bonecus discovered later, this is not an original song, unlike all the others.
Oh, really?
That's probably why it's not on the album.
Yeah, this is from some way old album, like predating Love Song album, that Rhea sung.
Huh.
He talked about it in the thread.
And the original version's really
good.
Yeah,
the original version's way better than this.
It's really good.
So I feel like that's why this isn't on the album proper, because it's not an original composition, and it doesn't quite fit. But nonetheless,
I think it fits lyrically.
It's still interesting. Yeah, it fits thematically and all, but
it feels off.
It's a bit of an oddball, I think.
To what extent would you say that this might be like an inspiration for Owari no Hoshino Love Song?
Well, it's not actually the same lyrics as the original.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
This is new lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
But it's composed the same. Very similar.
Pretty much.
Alright, so, yeah. Pi, let's talk about the music a bit.
Yeah, it's a pretty straightforward, very somber song. You've got the piano chords and you know, moving from chord to chord with a few notes in there keeps a very steady rhythm.
Actually.
Yeah,
which
it's very
probably
peaceful.
Surprising, but I really like this song. It has like this like kind of crazy mix of, I don't even know what the instruments are, but like it sounds kind of like a sitar, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's a sitar.
And then there's also like an electric guitar in there, but it's doing kind of like a kind of a surfer thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like kind of got this weird tropical kind of trippy feel to it, which is really cool considering the idea of like an airplane or travel, which I think fits pretty cool. I like it quite a lot. It's got kind of a nice mood to it. And it is kind of a relaxing song that, like, I feel like I could kick back and just kind of let it go. I don't know. It feels good.
Yeah. I can't
despite
help but wonder,
not necessarily being too happy, but
yeah. But I can't help but wonder why it is that the sitar is in this song, because Maeda sort of picked up the sitar somewhere around Rewrite and started using it. I want to say that there was quite a bit of sitar in Harmonia.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so it's like, I don't know what associations Maida has with that instrument.
I mean, Harmonia is all shit.
It's all post-pop.
Harmonia is all shit.
Shinji Orito, there we go. Thank you, Bonkus. Bonkus on the audience, throwing me a lifeline.
So, yeah, I'm just wondering what the associations with that instrument are that kind of come in. Like, why sitar of all instruments, right?
It is strange. I don't really have an answer to it, but I feel like it fits nice and kind of it has a warm feeling to it to me.
Yeah. Well, and it was very nice. You know, it was a very popular instrument like back in the 60s, so I can't help but get that sort of like classic rock vibe
that
from
kinda
it
hippie,
too.
Hippie trippy kind of feel to it as well.
Yeah.
Mm.
But yeah, cool. I enjoy the instrumentation. Good song. Very good song.
But I guess we should talk about story. That's always important. And I guess kind of because of the story and the different lyrics here, be able to kind of squeeze it into Love Song. Fair enough.
Yeah, it's sad. The first thing that comes to mind
is sad, but
first thing that comes to mind is that this is set in the end of the ruined world.
You think so? Yeah. There's definitely, well, one of the really important themes, I think, to the song is the feeling of nostalgia, which I think, well, there can be kind of like kind of a deep kind of gut butterfly kind of feeling about nostalgia. I feel like it's a happy feeling. This is like a happy emotion. And I definitely feel a lot like the character here is looking at the events of what happens in the song in a happy way, and is viewing it that way. Basically, I mean, the song is very short lyrically. It's pretty straightforward, where it's the character, I'm she, he, here. But it's
probably the grill, based on the picture.
I think it's the girl talking about the guy who flies away. That's just my
impression.
Because
she's on the ground looking at a bird in the picture.
Yeah. Which makes the second song in our list that has a female main character here.
Switch that around on the next one.
Worth note. But so, like, this, I guess they like each other, and the guy is, like, super just, like, a dreamy kind of person who wants to go on and see the world or whatever, because they're living in this gray world, and in his vision, he wants to take to the skies and break through the gray clouds and go see, you know, a world of color and move on. He's going to rip the clouds away and go forth into a bright world.
It kind of
gave
the impression to me that he wanted to change the world.
Yeah, he definitely is definitely a go-getter, wanting to go forward and explore and chase his dreams. And the girl is all about it. She's like, yeah, I'll help you and stuff. And she wanted to do it too, though, is like one of the important things. But I feel like she never made herself known that she wanted to go with them. And then before she had a chance to do it or before she did it herself, they had already left. And she goes forward saying that she's, I guess, looking up at the sky at the bird or something and sees some sort of chemtrail or something. I'm not really sure. And it's just like, I sure hope that's you out there, you know, having a living that life.
I mean, like, obviously you're getting the details right, but my interpretation of some of those things is a bit different. Like, obviously, I interpret this as being set in the ruined world, which is, like, I'm imagining this just, like, overcast all the time, kind of like a sort of planetarium thing. And when he says he wants to rip away the dark clouds, it's more of a sense of, I want to make this world better. Maybe he had some grand plan to save the world or some shit, and like he wanted
stop pollution or something.
I don't know exactly the details. It's very vague, but I feel like this sentiment here is that he wanted to change the state of things, and so to do that, he had to set out on his quest, and he didn't want to take her with him because it would be too dangerous. So that's kind of like maybe the vibe I'm getting.
Ooh, we are on the opposite side of that bridge.
Where are you, Ken? Are you with Biz?
I'm with neither of you. I think the guy is just an asshole. And once he got his plane, he's like, yo, I out. Peace.
That's basically what I was thinking. Like, well, because she, like, talks about, like, oh, I would come with you and tell me about this and that, and I would do maintenance, but you had already gone, and you're not coming back. The fuel was not for you to return. Like, he's out. Like, I'm more with Cannon here.
You might be right.
In that regard.
See, I definitely read it in a more... I read it in
both. I'll say that.
I read it more as like an analogy. I don't take it literally. I kind of, you know, just sort of imagine this person, you know, admiring somebody who's going on to bigger and better things.
Okay.
Somebody, you know, like a small town person who, you know, admires this person who's clearly going to go on to the big city or, you know, something like that. And, you know, in their mind, they kind of imagine themselves as being able to, if not keep up with that person that they admire, to be able to play some sort of support. But at the end of the day, the protagonist, the, you know, singer of this song, really had no place in that other person's life, and you know, now they're just sort of left behind, And when they see something that reminds them of that person that they admired, they just sort of remember, like, yeah, I bet they're still out there being awesome.
You know? I want to draw attention to something that I am overlooking, and it's very important to Aspie's viewpoint that I think is very accurate, is the second stanza that pretty straightforward says, the sunlight used to shine upon the earth, and the grass and the trees would grow luxuriously or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty important. Because it does sound a lot like an environment that is no longer, like nice,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, it could totally be both. Like maybe they are in this ruined world, but and that feeling is still accurate of, I want to go on and try to find that better place, but he leaves anyways, and then she's stuck there. Like, I think it's a bit of both.
I mean, it's...
Yeah,
I think we can read that.
It's love song of the closed world, not love song of the not closed world.
And so I kind of had like this depressing interpretation where it's like she believes fully that he failed in his quest, and like she's kind of like desperately clinging onto that hope that maybe that plane out there is actually him and he's still out there fighting the good fight.
I think the nostalgia is an important aspect. I'm not sure how that literally translates, but that's why it's there for me, is that I think that specific feeling, nostalgic scenery, is that way for a reason. It's that specific word for a reason, because I feel like that is... Nostalgia is a good thing. So, I think that positivity shines through.
Yeah. It's definitely, like, positive.
But so, what's the moral? That's the important question.
I don't know. My interpretation doesn't really factor that in.
I would say don't let your doors close on you. If you want to go on the adventure, you should probably say something.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't say something, be happy that you had the opportunity and that someone out there is still having a good time. I don't know.
Oh, that's good shit.
Sounds all right.
I must admit, this is not a song I'm really into, so.
I'm not sure if there's actually a moral to take away from it, because, you know, on the one hand, it seems like there's regret that, you know, she didn't go with, but mm-hmm. on the other hand, there's still, like, that nostalgia. It's, you know, sometimes you're nostalgic for something without wanting to have it back.
And hey, we can always just look back at the fact that, hey, this song isn't on the album, so you know what, if it doesn't necessarily fit 100%, then, well, hey.
Yeah, that's true.
There you have it.
All right. So, what do you say we move on to the next one?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to...
Futari dake no ark.
Do that one.
Ark for the two of us.
You guys like boats?
Let's talk about Moses for a little bit. So, let's talk about music. Which means pie. Go.
That's not Moses.
This is another song that feels like it should be like an opening for an anime.
This song kicks really quick. Song, like, it's funny that we kind of sandwiched Kimi no Airplane in here, because we got like a pretty bombastic song, and then we have something that like kind of kicks you in the teeth with this one. Like, it starts off pretty hard.
Can I append something to that? This sounds more like an insert song than an opening.
Yeah, you would say so?
Yeah. Okay. With the quiet bit in the middle for the fucking monologue. Yeah, we're so cool.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's got a lot of... a lot of feeling to it. Yeah. It definitely has, like, a lot of drive to it. My personal favorite part about this song is the pizzicato strings with all that reverb that comes in, where it's like, da-da-da-da-da. Like, that's... I don't know why, that just always stands out to me as, like, a really, like, nice little touch.
I love the instruments.
It gives you, like, a tingly...
Yeah. Then you get, like, that radio effect for a little bit, where it kind of cuts back, and... Yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff going on with this.
The radio effect kind of gave me, like, the... Considering the theme of the song, it gave me kind of this weird sense of, like... sensory failure, in a sense, like the reception's going out, so like it kind of makes me think of like a numbness. So like I think that's kind of cool, considering the song is it's fucking cold.
Oh, BRB, dying of exposure.
Yeah.
That happens a lot.
People dying of exposure?
With minor stuff?
That happens a lot with this album in general.
That's true. Yeah, that radio thing is a Maeda favorite for sure. And then I also like right near the end, there's kind of like this false ending moment right after the your legs weren't moving anymore.
Yeah, and then it picks back up.
Yeah, it picks back up, and I could just like imagine if this was a TV series and you sort of took like this story and made it long form, that could be like a false protagonist moment. Like the whole rest of the story was following this, you know, bright-eyed character. Absolutely. Who's super optimistic.
And then you make the flip here where someone's like, I've learned from this person in my past, and now I've got to carry the torch forward.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like,
I'm the captain now.
Yeah, right up to that moment, you're just like, oh, wait. Maybe he's not the protagonist. Maybe it's this character instead. Mm-hmm. It's fun.
It's that moment is one of the reasons why it's more of an insert song than an opening, because like, that's when you think it's over, but then the Giga Drill Breaker comes back. I mean, what?
I mean, what?
Because like, they usually have like that quiet part, and then it picks back up full speed instantly. Yeah. And
yep.
That's why I call it an insert song.
Mm. Yeah.
Fair. That's a good interpretation. Yeah, I like it. Yeah, I like that a lot. So, I guess, since we've talked about all the feelings that the song gives, which fits perfectly with its lyrics, let's talk about the lyrics. I guess the gist of the story here is, my interpretation is this is like an adult and a child. Sex does not feel important, I don't think. I can't really tell from the picture, and I don't really know. But it seems like an adult and a child.
I could see it as siblings. You know, I don't know.
Siblings?
But that,
maybe.
I don't know. You could pretty much apply any relationship to this one. It's plenty ambiguous.
Yeah, it seems like adult child is the thing I got. I can't really pin anything else
looks
to
like
it.
Looks like the ice climbers to me.
It's the ice climbers.
What the fuck?
You know, looking at the picture?
They can't wobble no more.
Looks like they're sitting down.
Even if you lose your nana, you gotta stay positive and get that stock off.
So, yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, okay. I don't know. It does look like they're sitting down, Yurak. That's right. Maybe not. I don't know. No.
Okay. Two people. One of them is optimistic, the other one's more pessimistic, or just kind of going along with the flow. So
they're like, oh, whatever you, silly kid.
Yeah.
Just follow your lead. Sure. Let's go do this thing.
So they hear this story about a giant arc for Space Journey. This is like the world has ended, and everybody else kind of takes this story about the arc as, oh, it's just a rumor, it's nothing real. And then the optimistic person says, we're going to go find that arc. And, you know, I bet it's at the end of the world. It's like, why do you think that? It's like, in fact, I bet it's on the top of that mountain. It's like, all right.
Okay.
That doesn't make any sense, but sure, let's do it.
It's your world, let's go.
And then he dies.
RIP.
Yeah, I guess the gist of the story here is happy person is like, yeah, let's go, and they're prancing along, and the other person's just kind of dragging their feet behind them. And then I guess the prancing person used a bit too much energy because they went and died. And then the angry person's like, man, I really learned something from you about being happy and you're dying and stuff, so you know what, now I'm gonna go on and I'm gonna find the thing, because you know what, chasing your dreams is what's up despite everything, even if you're gonna end up alone.
This is 100% Midafetamines.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, accurate. Such Mida.
I think the other moral of the story is that if you drag yourself through the like barren tundra, you're either going to die or go insane.
Thanks, Pat.
Is that what the image is? Are they actually just fucking out of their minds and they think that they see a giant, you know, ship that kind of looks like some sort of weird space whale thing?
That's what I'm guessing, but that's just me.
Yeah, who knows? Like, we could interpret this a number of ways. Maybe there is a ship, maybe there isn't. I think the song kind of uses it as sort of a metaphor for hope, not necessarily a physical ship. But the,
yeah, I think so. Sorry.
There is a ship in the illustration, so who knows? I don't know. We can interpret it either way.
I think I know, but that's not in this podcast.
All right. Well, we'll get to that later. Yeah, I don't know. Like, this is pretty straightforward, right? It's just,
yeah,
it's a sad, sad story with a really good message.
Like, what the moral is just in the lyrics, like. To have an innocent heart and to embrace the dream, to have unbreakable strength and believe in hope. Like, that's very straightforward. Like,
yeah.
And I think that that's a great message, and it fits really nice with the song, and the song makes me feel that way.
Mm.
Like, the song is very happy. Mm. I don't know. It's got a nice upbeatness to it, and it's cool.
Even if that dream is a lie, there's still value in chasing that dream.
Absolutely.
Hell yeah. All right. Let's move on to the next song, then.
That's that. Yep.
All right, killer song.
Who likes murder?
Kind of wild.
Wait, Cannon. I thought you'd had to talk about like how super good the solo was in that song.
It's super good.
There you go. Okay, now we can move on. I just had to get that out.
Yeah, that's fair. I fucking love that solo. Oh my god. This album's got good music. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh shit! I completely forgot that I should be mentioning who's doing the arrangements for these. Because they are different, and as you would expect, actually no, as you wouldn't suspect, because I can't say what that song is yet. That song is arranged by Ken Ito, Ito, and the illustrations are Nanakusa, and on the previous song, Owari no Sekakara, or not the previous song, but the first song, because I don't have notes on Airplane. Is the illustrations for that song are actually Asami Yuriko, who is much more known now for being mangas and stuff. So I didn't even know that, and I realized that might actually be like their first work together.
Wow.
No, because Angel Beats was at the same time. Never mind. Nope. So that they just happen to be working together at the time. She doesn't do any of the other art, but I thought that was cool.
Huh. Cool.
Because the art in that song is fucking awesome. So hey. Anyway, sorry. Moving on. So killer song. Okay. What could this possibly be about, guys?
This is
it's a killer song, guys.
It sure is.
Who described this as Hokuto no Ken?
I described this as Mad Max.
The same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
very high tempo, very upbeat, aside from the like bridge in the middle, which is completely different.
I'm gonna just be straightforward and just be like, this song kicks ass.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
This is good shit.
So, it's just a good song. It's real quick. I say we just dive right into the story and the animation. The animation for this one is particularly awesome, in my opinion.
It's the one they marketed.
It is. There's some really cool kind of, art choices, art direction in this. And definitely important to note that this was illustrated by Based Zen, so that's important. Very important, because Zen is great.
Yeah.
And the arrangement is Takahiro Furukawa.
Okay, cool. So, kill us all. Yeah, freaking...
Before we go into lyrics, I want to talk about the presentation of the video, because damn! This song is like an advert for the Ruined World. And this is why I think it was released on the single first. Like, it was the single was called Killer Song. Like, this song wants you to know the world is a mess. It's got skeletons and deserts and ruins.
Mm-hmm. They mention, like, in the lyrics, it's talking about, basically the environment is so fucked that there's, like, no winter anymore. There's just summer and autumn, basically. So you have basically hot and a little bit less hot. So it's actually just the state of Florida.
Hey, it's dry. That's Arizona.
Oh, okay. Fair. Touché.
I think Owari no Sekakara was, introducing you to it and showing there's a normal world before it, but this song is like, hey yo, this is Mad Max, this is Fist of the North Star. Everything's
yeah,
everything
yeah.
is
so we're
fucked
totally
up. Look at these images.
Oh, what I mentioned in the first album is like or the first song. This feels a lot like it's one world, and we're just seeing different stories in this same world.
Yeah, I feel like the main purpose of this song is to establish all that, which is great because it's the third song. There's also something really funny going on in the video, because the lyrics, they appear on screen as it goes. The occasional words are in red, and those words are always stuff like killed or truth or used or strangled or survived.
It's always something that's a lot more like topically sharp.
Yeah.
And
Japan loves this shit. They love like using red to like highlight edgy words in typography. Like,
there's something particularly cool about one of the lines actually that me and Kenan were discussing before we got into this that I think he's about to bring up. The trembly hands.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
That's good shit.
Yeah, there's one of them. I felt the clear response while my hands were still trembling. I think you can tell which words are red. Response and trembling.
Yeah.
It's like, those are the important things. Like, not the actor stabbing, just the, whoa, shit, I just stabbed a man.
Yeah, because it's like, the character is kind of getting into this desensitized state where, like, the killing isn't the thing. It's the emotional toll that it's taking on them and not the act itself.
And then right after this,
so like physically they're just like, it's nothing to them, but like the actual action is like, ooh.
Mm-hmm. After this is the part where she gets her fucking legs chopped off or whatever. And it's the part of the song where it goes slow and she goes to Roxas and she talks to him about how she just killed it. And there's no red text during this part. It's only when those other guys are involved, the douchebags. But when it's just her and Roxas, there's none of this emphasis on the bad stuff. Even though he's saying...
The song,
the blind man's Roxas. Come on, look at the video.
Yeah, he does look like Roxas.
Yeah,
the song like completely loses the adrenaline rush. Like everything just
even though he's saying, "Hey, you killed one, just kill a few more. Who cares?" That shit would be red in the earlier parts of the song, but it's still just white in that part. And that's fancy. That's all symbolic and stuff. That looks nice.
And it's a big shift. It's a big shift in the actual story too, which is cool. But. We'll get to that as we go ahead and run through what the whole gist of the story is. We've kind of touched on a lot of bits of it.
Dancing around it.
We should probably just take a good walk through it and take
a
good look at everything.
I'm done with the presentation.
All right, take us away, Biz.
All right, so we're living in the old destroyed world, and we have some more supernatural shit going on here, where we've got Roxas, as we have deemed him, who is a blind man who can see nothing, but he can see the truth. He always knows the truth, which is interesting because that immediately makes him a tool to the people in this world that they're in at the moment. Mm. Because people will come to him and ask him for stuff like, hey, where's this? Or hey, who did that? Or hey, this, that, and the other thing. And his little friend here, his knight, this girl starts to realize that this is bad, because obviously people are going to end up getting killed and things are just going to get really nasty. And that's exactly the direction that it goes in. But it becomes something that, instead of just a world thing where, okay, they find out about people and then those people go and kill them, it becomes a thing where his safety becomes a problem, because it's like, you're the reason why people are being killed and this, that, and the other thing. And so she realizes pretty soon that, okay, this is going to come to the point where I'm going to have to defend you, and now we're going to be the ones killing people ourselves, and I'm going to have to kill people. And that's where she's like kind of starts to struggle here, because it's survival, right? Because this is a world of survival. They bring up the topic that it's a world where everyone's looking for water, and that's like the point where they realize that, okay, here's what's when things are going to start going wrong, because they come to him asking, where's the water? Because they need somewhere to live, right? And he knows, because he knows everything and he always says everything that's truthful. And they say that the water source, he says where the water source is, and it's like near some orphanage or something. And I guess the people that are consulting with him are fucking dangerous, and they probably want the water themselves too. So the girl is like, alright, I gotta fucking kill these people, right? Only it doesn't necessarily go that well. And she gets fucked up because I guess her knife shines in the darkness. And she gets her fucking leg sliced, like the tendons in her legs, so she can't
walk
anymore.
Yeah, I mean, when you're taking on a big group of people, it doesn't matter whether your knife shines in the darkness. One little girl on like five badass like wasteland wanderers.
Yeah. Things don't go so well for her. So she gets wounded and crawls up to Roxas and is like, what's gonna happen? Oh no, this is terrible. I can't do anything. This is bad. And the guy just like, hey, killed one, kill some more. And she just, apparently that's all it took for her to calm down and focus. And after that point, apparently, even though she doesn't have any fucking legs that work, she fucking kills everybody.
Roxas tells us how to, because he can see the truth, right?
Yeah, so, like, mm-hmm. She kind of always has, like, this magical ability to... They become this duo, I guess, where he can predict everything and she can react to everything and becomes this invulnerable force of murder.
I guess that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, so she's just kind of the... She's like whenever you're playing Assassin's Creed and you mess the counter button and you just never lose. Yeah, there you go. or any of these wonderful Batman games where you just push the counter button over and over again and kill everyone. yeah, there you go. She got Batman senses. And that's basically what happens here. And it's gone so far that like the song shifts to this kind of this being a legend. In time, apparently, where there's just now there exists a man and a girl who just are impenetrable in their little castle somewhere, and that's pretty much the gist of it.
Yeah, it's a fun one. Like, you know, I could see this being like a good scenario for like a game. Or just like a very short like OVA or something like that. It's just, it's a cool story, and it's super intense. And the thing that like stands out to me is that the moral of the story is like such a bad moral for a world like our own, but such a good moral for like this sort of like cutthroat awful universe, which is just, you know,
stick together.
Well, I was going to say that the first kill is the hardest. It's like, damn.
Yeah, okay, yeah, fair.
That's brutal.
It's Maida talking about scenes you have to cut for the anime for Angel Beats.
And I mean, that's accurate, because, like, it goes with the flow of the song, too, where that intensity is, like, you're kind of feeling the shock of everything, but then whenever she is able to, you know, bring her focus and you don't have the red words anymore and she's able to go ahead and do the shit she needs to do and not be scared, that's when she just becomes unstoppable. So there's like a big moral of courage in there, I think, and being able to kind of look past the actions and look at the necessities, which is fair.
Yeah.
In its own right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad that I don't live in a world where this is a good moral, but yeah, it's kind of interesting to have a story where the moral is so dark and
understanding what needs to be done, basically.
Yeah.
And I mean, kind of a touchy subject, but I mean, that does kind of exist in this world.
Yeah.
When you look at war, that's kind of how it is, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just glad I don't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but feel like this that would fit nicely in the world of Harmonia.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair. But, I wanted to draw attention to one specific interesting aspect of this story that might have been overlooked. It's just kind of something I was thinking about. So the girl, I guess, has knowledge. The pair of them have knowledge of this water source. Otherwise, he's not going to be able to tell them where it is. Because he's just a yes man, right? So they have to know. I don't think he's got too much of a superpower in that sense. I'm going to go ahead and assume that they might actually know where it is. And she mentions... In the illustrations, this girl seems very young. And in the... In the story, she mentions this orphanage, apparently, that is connected to that water source, and it seems as if they want to protect that as well, so I wonder if she came from there.
Yeah!
Is something that kind of came into my mind, and I feel like that's very interesting. I'm not sure what it connects to, but there's a sense of... There is... what's the word I'm looking for? There's goodness in these two characters' hearts, and I feel like the people that they're killing are bad people. And I feel like there is no sin, there's no choice but for them to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there's justification in these actions.
Yeah.
So even if it's in a world that we would never want to actually have to be in, despite the fact that we kind of are, I feel like there is kind of a bit of glory? Is that the word I'm looking for? There's light, I guess, to it.
Yeah. They have lots of images that are from different parts of the world, but the only part that has the vignetting is that, like, shot of the orphanage, which makes me think that it's a flashback of some kind.
Yeah. So that's probably a correct observation. But, yeah, I wanted to bring that up because I thought it was cool. It's just kind of a fun...
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, we kind of have to assume at some point that these people are fighting for a good cause. The story doesn't go out of its way to, like, present that to us, apart from the fact that they saved an orphanage. But, like, they're going around killing all these people, they must have a reason, right? They're not just, like, murderers.
Right.
Well, they are murderers, but they're not just, like, killing for the sake of it. They must be, like, sort of a vigilante force in this world, I think. Just, like...
And it kind of gives me that feeling that now that they're in that impregnable castle or whatever, I feel like they've secluded themselves from everyone else because they don't want to have that burden of people coming and asking them things for good or for bad. They want to just separate themselves from the world because of their power is too much.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just like, if you come in here, you gonna get it. Like, we're just gonna stay here and mind our own business. And that's why it faded into legend and is no longer a thing that's happening.
Yeah.
And the final little bit is that they use the term love here in regards to their bond, which may not be a literal a romantic love, but a partnership nonetheless, kind of a brotherhood almost, where like they're this a duo that one of them can't see and the other one can't move very well, but the two of them together create a force that cannot be stopped. Which is good shit.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Let's wrap this up. We've done the first 4/3 songs of Ori no Hoshino Love Song. Next week, for the next two podcasts, we're going to be covering 5 songs a week. So to all of our forumers keeping up the discussion, make sure you keep on top of that. I know some people have already started reading ahead, so that's really awesome. We've already got the discussion in the works. But yeah, hopefully there won't be any more delays so we can pump these last podcasts out and enjoy it. So, thank you especially to Canon for joining us on this podcast. We got you on for at least one of them.
Did it, boys.
We did it.
You did
it. Ori no Hoshino Love Song happened.
You guys took over for Killer Song for me, really. I got my presentation points out of the way and then you guys just went wild.
Awesome. But yeah, I'd love to have you on for a future podcast, but we'll see what happens. It's pretty much up in the air at this point. So yeah.
Scheduling's hard.
Well, I'll show up for any more.
Thanks to everyone who joined me for this podcast, and thanks to everybody who listened. Shout outs to our listeners Bonecast and Helios Alpha. Bonecast, you should be here. Before I go, I have to mention Black Hayate has actually prepared some fan art to commemorate Killer Song. We have the girl here with her knife covered in blood and shock at what she's done. I guess it's kind of like the moment of transition by our interpretation of going from
the first
kill, the first kill, exactly. Going from that sort of innocence to then, I'll just kill some more. So, thank you, Black Hayate, for sharing that with us. Hopefully, we can get some more fan work going for the remaining week. So
that's nice.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, it's good. So, thank you once more, and we'll see you next week. Catch you later, guys.
Ciao.
Don't die of exposure.